This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thank you, Pete, and thank you guys for listening. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. CJ Nitkowski, who calls Rangers games on TV and broadcasts baseball talk shows nationally on MLB Network Radio, a former ninth overall pick who had a decade-long big league career, and a gentleman that I like talking ball with. Happy to have you back on the show, CJ. Thanks for joining me and Danny. How are you?
Grant, it is my pleasure, brother. I miss you. I hope you're doing well, and it's good to tap in again.
You too. You too. What a weird time. It's just crazy. You know, normal. Four of the guys so far who have opted out in baseball, and two of them are in our backyard here in D.C. with the Nationals at a 50% clip, Joe Ross and Ryan Zimmerman. How do you think that'll be viewed in the clubhouse?
I think it'll be respected. I mean, listen, with a clubhouse like anything, you're going to get some varying opinions here and there. You might get an outlier of a guy that's maybe a little off the wall. That's common for any topic. But I got to believe that it'll be well respected, especially, you know, for everyone that has their concerns, and for these guys, or for at least a couple of them, having young kids is a big one that's on their mind. You can't help but respect it. Or if you have somebody that's, you know, immune compromised at home, how could you get upset about that? I mean, they're pieces that certainly will be missed, right, as you're trying to chase victories throughout the year, and you wish you could have all of your teammates. But I'd be shocked that, I mean, certainly publicly, I don't think anybody would be dumb enough to say anything negative about a teammate, skipping out or go ahead and take the rest of the season off because they're not comfortable. There may be a couple here and there, but I think that overall you will have guys that completely understand. They'll miss their teammates, but they absolutely respect their decision.
CJ, at the Ryan Zimmerman level, a.k.a. the guy that's, you know, a decade and a half in the bigs, has done what you're supposed to do at every turn. As you mentioned, as well-respected as anybody could be, people understand his decision with his family life, newborn, his mom, et cetera. Everybody gets that. But guys like in their 20s that haven't really gotten the huge payday just yet, who are walking away, who may not have those same situations, you think they'll be viewed the same as those kind of established veterans? Or is it anybody that decides to opt out, everyone will get it 100%?
I think it's a really fair point, Danny, right? The idea for Joe Ross, I mean, there's a part of me that almost admires that more. Right. The idea that, yes, he hasn't made that. He's made some decent money, but not life changing money, not a pile of cash that he can sit on for the rest of his life like the other guys can, and still deciding not to play. I was really concerned, I think, for all of us. Right. And it was fortunate that you guys could continue to do radio. I've been able to do a little bit of radio to kind of keep you in and keep you sharp. A lot of people were just home doing nothing for the longest time. And it's weird. And I worried about how some guys would react. And as much as everybody has been anxious to come back, but I just mean in every industry, there's something about being home that doesn't feel right. And I wondered about any apathy that might start to set in a little bit, or you start thinking about what you're doing. You have a lot of time to think about life and maybe make some different decisions. And in the case of Joe Ross, I think as an example, and any other young player, it could be about, you know, just the idea of, you know, bigger picture life stuff. And what do I really want to be doing? No doubt the virus plays a big role in these decisions, but I always been a little bit curious about how guys were doing when they were home, not having baseball and starting thinking about some bigger picture things. And I kind of wonder a little bit if that's the case with Joe Ross.
CJ Nitkowski on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. You're so plugged in, not only with the Rangers, but all over baseball. What is the level of concern that you hear from the people you talk to about being able to get through this entire season and not having to stop at some point?
Yeah, I think everyone's just keeping their fingers crossed, right? It's so interesting, you know, and certainly none of us are epidemiologists and are experts, but we certainly listen to everything that's kind of going on. And it's not great news to see the cases going up, but there are other numbers that maybe don't scare us as much as the total case numbers, right? So as we see younger people become more infected, you're worried. Of course you're worried, right? You're running an organization. You're worried about all your employees, your players, and the idea of having a baseball season. But then can you find some solace in the idea that, you know what, there are people that are getting this and don't know they have it, and then they get over it, right? I think about the golfer. I forgot his name that had to withdraw a couple of weeks ago from an event and because he tested positive. And then he had three negative tests within a 72-hour period and never had a symptom, right? Like, I'm encouraged by that. I'm not happy that he tested positive the first time, but it is encouraging to say, okay, maybe we don't need to freak out about every single positive test, even though we wish everybody tested negative. And I'm hoping that the industry kind of sees that a little bit and understands that and say, hey, we're going to have positive tests. We're already having positive tests. We may get a bunch rolling in right now as players are getting tested over these next couple of days as they get to their, you know, quote-unquote summer camps. And everyone has, for some of them, that very first test. But I think that it's cautious optimism for most teams. I know that it's like anything, like I said earlier, you can find everybody on the spectrum of we shouldn't be playing any sports to let's completely throw caution to the wind. We know we got to be in the middle there somewhere. It's just a matter of where we end up being. And I think that nobody knows for sure, but they don't like seeing the numbers, and everyone's just hoping that there's not going to be an outbreak, a second wave, but the really bad numbers as far as hospitalizations and death that follow.
CJ Nikowski with us, longtime big leaguer here on Grant and Danny. This is when Ryan Zimmerman's doing that, I don't know what else to call it, like sort of a running diary or, here are my thoughts with the AP. And it was really insightful, and he gave his family perspective. He didn't not include stuff about the owners, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's a thoughtful dude. He's smart. He's sharp. He's worldly. He thinks about these sorts of things. There's that paragraph in there. It's like, the owners ain't traveling. They're not the ones missing their families. They're in their suites. We're not. We're taking the risk. How much of this, and again, this is specific maybe to Zim, but in general, the feeling that players, I think, are not thrilled about the way these last several months went. They don't like the owners from years past and what's going on in free agency or not going on in a lot of cases. How much of that is the backdrop for the CBA and everything else kind of next year, CJ?
Yeah, I think a pretty decent amount, right? The idea that they knew that if they did not accept the last deal, that they were going to get 60 games implemented by the commissioner. And they still decided to say no, knowing that if they said yes, they would have got a better deal. It still would have been 60 games, which you're getting anyway, but there's other money involved, right, as far as how much they wouldn't have to pay back from the initial 170, what they were going to get additionally from the postseason pool. I think that totaled all together those things, about, what, $58 million. We were going to have a 16-team postseason. That meant more people in the postseason, more playoff shares, all of that kind of stuff. Like, it was beneficial for the players to say yes to that deal, but they still said no, and it felt like to me no was more out of spite. Maybe the idea of leaving some litigation, the possibilities of filing a grievance open as well. And they're not happy. And they were pretty unified. I know the vote wasn't unanimous, but I think for the most part they were pretty unified, especially for the guys that have been around, the older players. And they weren't thrilled about where this thing had gone, why it had taken so long, and why it seemed like they were just on completely different pages. And that's not uncommon. I mean, you look at every time that we've had a work stoppage or something close to a work stoppage, that's usually how it goes down. I've been through a couple of them myself, and there's always a little bit of bitterness. And so you combine that with the fact that there's a pandemic and people are nervous and worried, and we don't have every single answer we wish that we could have. And then they feel like they're the ones that are most at risk, and you're not happy with the way your last negotiation went. It makes sense that there's some bitterness there, and that players haven't been afraid to speak out about it.
Players are reporting to their home ballparks to kick off summer training, I guess we're calling it, today. And we will be playing baseball in 22 days with the Nationals and the Yankees getting the season started, COVID-19 permitting, I suppose. CJ Nikowski with us on Grant and Danny. On a scale of this will be completely unpredictable and really weird things are going to happen to 60 games is enough for the really good teams to be good and the bad teams to stink, how do you think this will actually play out when the games start?
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity, you know, in our sport, right? 162 games, it's pretty tough to have a Cinderella story. They don't really exist in our sport. You end up getting weeded out. You may even have a good 5 months, 5.5 months, and you're still not there at the end in the postseason. That's what's unique about our sport. There's, you know, the short-term run is just not something that's available to us and the teams to be able to get you into the postseason. And so I think we get a couple of surprises. I think we get a couple of surprises both ways. Teams that maybe make the postseason we weren't expecting, and perhaps ones that we thought should have been there end up not getting there. I think about teams like the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think about teams like the Chicago White Sox, teams that were taking steps. You know, we didn't look at them necessarily as contenders just yet, but it was coming around the corner. Well, perhaps in a 60-game season, it could happen. Toronto especially, because they revamped their rotation. They have an older rotation. Well, they're not worried about 30 starts for those old guys, right? It's give me 10 to 12. Nate Pearson is sitting there waiting in the wings. He may be in that rotation pretty soon as well. That's the kind of team, I think, that could end up surprising here. And I think it's good for the game because it's hard. It's really, it would be hard for a team like that to do it over the course of a full season. And so whatever surprises we get are good for the game. I do think that, again, it's a shame we didn't get the 16-team postseason because, listen, the postseason is still tough to get through. But you guys saw it last year. The Nationals almost lost that wild card game. And instead, they're World Series champions. So it's a, you know, it's a lot to get through to get a ring. But you put 16 teams in there and the first series is the best of five, there's no asterisk going anywhere for that World Series champion because it'd be really difficult to get through the, you know, the entire gauntlet of trying to win a ring. So that part of it would have been nice to have, but I think the 60-game season, the sprint, the idea that everyone's in first place essentially at what usually is around trading deadline time, I think it's going to be fun for the game. We don't want to do it every year, but it'd be fun for the game this year.
Yeah, kind of a special circumstance, right? Let's do something weird. My theory has been, and I've talked myself into and out of probably 25 teams having a successful sprint season, TJ, so I really don't know. I don't think anybody does how people are going to react to this. But to me, it's a team, you know, bullpens get worn down over the course of the year, right, where guys have back-to-back appearances a bunch of times and, you know, 75, 80, 90 games in, a lot of times you start to get those injuries. In a sprint, I feel like a team with a great bullpen is going to have an advantage because I don't think starters are going deep until 80% of the season is done, which is 45, 50 games. I feel like a team with a great bullpen has an advantage. Is that a crazy theory, or is it just going to be even that much more random?
No, I think, listen, you always do, but you certainly do in a shortened season. So you look at the Yankees and the depth that they have, especially with some of the question marks that they have in their rotation, they will rely heavily on their bullpen. And I think the idea that the IL has gone back down to 10 days helps a little bit. The expanded rosters help a little bit. I mean, nobody happier than the Tampa Bay Rays to see that 30-man roster to start the season, right? Nobody uses their roster more than they do. It's crazy. They had 9 guys on the bench in September last year. I mean, they could completely flip the lineup depending on who was pitching. So that definitely plays to the advantage of certain teams. When you talk about the bullpen and the arms, at least a 30-man roster for 2 weeks, right? Then we go down to 28 for another 2 weeks. For half of the season, you have at least a 28-man roster. Absolutely, that plays to the advantage of teams with good arms. And I think another fascinating part of this is, and Grant knows this stuff really well, is who from the 2020 draft is going to get a shot this year. We may see it, right, for the exact reason that you just mentioned. It might be a guy that gets 10 innings pitched this year, right? Whatever it is, like, come help out in the bullpen in September. And there are a couple of arms, I think, that teams think. I think we saw at least one that's on that 60-man pool of players. There could be a couple that from this draft with really no even college season under their belt could end up being impactful as well in a bullpen. Kind of like we saw with, not exactly, but how we saw David Price helping out the Rays. What was that, all the way back in 2008?
CJ, we miss seeing you on the call of ball games, but hopefully by the end of the month, we'll crank it back up. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Grant, Danny, my pleasure, man. Have a great day.
Thank you, buddy.
Be well. CJ Nitkowski, you can follow him on Twitter. He's an entertaining follow at CJ Nitkowski, just his name without any spaces or underscores. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Yesterday on our show, Ross Tucker said Cam Newton might not start for the New England Patriots, which we thought was weird. There's a report that doubles down on that today, next on The Fan. Danny, I'm sure you can see on the Zoom that I'm eating some Quest chips. You've got to try these.
I probably should.
They're really good. They're only, let's see, we're looking at 5 grams of carbs with one fiber. So do the math. So that's 4 grams of carbs, 140 calories, and 19 grams of protein. You got to check these out, dude. I'm telling you, you'll love them.
Yeah. All right. Right. It's pretty good. That's a pretty good trolling bit. That's nice little, it is exasperating. There's a great episode of Modern Family where Phil can't figure out why his wife is angry at him, because she's been telling him for years to try the wedge salad, and he finally tries a wedge salad on his own, and he comes back and goes, you know what I tried today? It was really good. It was a wedge salad. And she, like, loses it because she's been telling him for years to do that. I was on all the Quest products years ago, even before we started dieting, as, like, with the protein bars and the different ways to get crunchy snacks in. I've had Quest chips for years, and I tried to bring them to your attention, and you wouldn't pay attention. You didn't like barbecue flavor, if you recall. Remember, you made a gross noise when you had to taste barbecue sauce, and you claimed you didn't even like barbecue chips, but now you're in on barbecue chips from Quest. But yes, it is nice to be trolled in such a way, Grant. Good job by you.
I think I like barbecue sauce. What do you mean I made a gross noise when I ate barbecue sauce?
Yeah, you were very upset when you had to eat barbecue sauce. You didn't like it.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, remember we did that whole barbecue sauce taste test, and you were very upset at having to eat barbecue sauces, and you were grossed out.
Wasn't it other weird types of sauce, or was it just barbecue? Because I've always eaten like barbecue ribs or barbecue chicken or something like that. Although I've never actually grilled chicken in my life as much as I grill. I think it's impossible to do correctly. But
it's not fun, by the way.
It's not.
Grilled chicken is, I'm going to say something that's a little bit blasphemous. It's not that awesome. You got to slather it in sauce. There's a great chance you overdo it for fear of underdoing it. You know, you can underdo red meat and it's still delicious. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, oh, I undercooked my burger. Oh, so it's awesome. Oh, no, my steak is still rare. Oh, so it's terrific. You undercook chicken, you get sick. See, everybody overcooks it, and then it's like that rubbery thing. It's overrated. There, I said
it. I've never
cooked
it well, I don't think. I love it at a restaurant when I know that they know what they're doing and they can cook it well. I'll order it at restaurants until the cows come home, but I guess the chickens come home or something. That maybe wasn't a great analogy. But the point of the dude's story is I never cook it at home. I just went upstairs to get these Quest chips, which I'm serious. I know you're a little bit reluctant, but you should check out.
They're I probably should check them out, yeah.
And I know you haven't heard of them yet, but you should try them. But the baby is about to do a little lunchtime situation.
Okay.
And the mother is cooking right now in our little like air fryer, toaster oven, whatever that thing is that she's using.
Multipurpose.
King's Hawaiian rolls.
Oh, my
God. They're toasting those up really good for the baby. And then she's going to do a PB&J on toasted little mini King's Hawaiian rolls, which sounds just so much better than me eating protein chips and a protein bar between now and dinner probably. But maybe like if I get lucky, a grape or a watermelon slice or two.
Yeah, people that
but
can
man,
eat bread.
Is that a great meal?
Like that. People that can eat bread like that and it's like encouraged and they don't do it should be ashamed of themselves. For those of us that can't enjoy that or aren't allowed to enjoy that, or enjoy that and gain 7 pounds of disgusting side fat and look gross with our shirts off. Like, it's a disservice to us. And I'm talking to your friend Breadless Joe Jackson, basically, here. This is not a broadcast, it's a narrow cast. To your buddy who has 9,000 abs and won't eat bread.
Well, I'll go one step further, if you're okay with that.
Please.
I'd love to go one step further here.
Sure. Let's escalate this thing.
If you don't have man boobs and you're listening right now, okay? Mm-hmm. Or there's a better way to do this. If you wear size, thank you, Tommy.
Thank
you definitely
Tommy.
Get
thank
a game
you
ball. If you wear size 34 jeans or smaller, definitely if you wear 30s or 32s. If you wear 28s, then first of all, what are you doing?
I mean, yeah, what are you
really
doing?
How do you even do
happened?
That?
What's happened?
But if you
room.
Wear size 34s or smaller today, you should just eat a lot of bread and butter.
Just toast
That's
the bread.
What you should do today. Yeah. And then tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. Eat all the bread and all the butter and order takeout and eat Chinese and then eat Thai and then eat something wonderful that's Italian and just eat a lot if
yes,
you
I
wear a size 34
that.
Or under. Right? Isn't that fair?
Pretty much. You got to enjoy it for the rest of us because we can't. We can't. You got to do that.
34 might be on that brink, though. I'm trying to think. Maybe 32 or under is what I'm looking for.
I think 34 is appropriate. 34 is appropriate.
What do you wear? Do you wear 36s or 34s?
I'm a 35 when I'm right.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So
are you right now? What are you?
I am not right now. I'll tell you that right now. It's the bigger number. I got to go to the. There's different sections. Now we're getting into this. There are different.
So if I
sections,
gave you a 35 today and you put it on. Be a little bit snug.
And be a little bit snuggy. Now, there's different sections of the closet, different sections of items in the various drawers. And if to the layperson who would just come in and inspect them, I don't know why anybody would come and inspect my clothing storage situation, but they wouldn't see any difference. But I know the difference. There's some shirts that are a little bit more loose. There's a couple sets of pantaloons. If you go to the further to the right side, that's when I've been excellent on the dietary, and I can squeeze into those SOBs.
I've got sections in my closet, too.
Yeah, like, we've all got sections.
This section is, I'm feeling great. Your boy's been killing it for a couple of months. This section is, I can wear all this stuff right now. It just might not look, it's a little bit snug. Yeah. And then this section
not
is,
this one.
You're just kind of letting yourself go a little bit. Those are the sections. But
yeah, I got gold pants and a gold blazer.
All the sections are better than my old sections. Pre-EMP 180.
That's true.
Those clothes are gone. So that's healthy. That's good. That's something,
that's right.
I would say.
That's right.
Oh, man.
I have a couple. Remember when we did that model type shoot? Remember they wanted
remember
to take
it
pictures?
Well.
And we it looked like an artsy band cover or whatever. So when we were, that was when we were at our best. Like we were skinny and we looked like very emotional. You know, like we were like the whole world's too much for us because we're so thin kind of thing. You know, those awesome faces we made.
If we started a band, we'd have to scream about, like, love in a weird state.
Yeah.
And it would have to be done in a screaming tone.
Very screaming. I still have a couple items that I bought in that time where I'm like, this is the new normal. This is who I am, show tune style, that I haven't worn in a long time because
I
can't
get back
there.
So I knew at that time. That, like, I was small. I was a tiny little boy. Like, I didn't want to be that small, per se. So I knew that was a fun thing while it lasted. I wanted to just kind of get to a healthier weight. But, yeah, I remember you were buying vests, and you were really going all in. You were really having a good time.
No, it's not even there. It's South Moon Under, which is where the appearance was. All those things still fit because those clothes are awesome, and, like, they're a little bit stretchy, so I can do that. I bought, like, a pair of jeans. I bought, I can't remember what else. There was a shirt that I bought, like, here and there. But there are a few things that I'm like, you can have some snug-fitting clothes. You're just like Nick Ashew. Not as handsome, but you're just like Nick is. He can wear this. So can you. This is the new you, Danny. Collecting dust. Probably home to moths at this point. Because I cannot get into them. And I have to do a thing where I forget which jeans they are, and I put them on, and then I get 80% of the way up, and I go, oh, no. These are the ones that won't get past my man thighs, my Brett Olivero thighs. This is not going to happen for me. Shut it down.
You have a very different body than me, by the way. Like, my body, my fat is always in my love handles and sides. Like, I get this tire around me when I get heavier.
Of course you do. You're a man. That's where we all get it.
No, you have, like, thighs.
Yes.
And you have a butt. I don't have
giant
a butt
ass.
At all. You have, yeah. What would I call it? Like a big
huge ass?
Yeah, that's what I would call it. I don't have that.
Describe it.
I don't have a butt at all.
Looking for? That's a baseball thing, dude.
Rick, she hates it. She's embarrassed. She's mad about it. She like calls me a frog. Like I don't have any butt at all, so I can't hold up my pants without a belt. It's a weird thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
So be happy. Be happy that you have a butt.
No, it's too much.
This segment was too much. So
got weird.
That's where we are. Grant and Danny on the fan at 11:45 today for our double play. I've got something that's wacky that people are doing during COVID-19 that they have to stop doing, and they're being told, stop doing this immediately. So I'll get into that coming up in about 15. Danny will have something for you as well. Next, though, we got to play this audio from Ross Tucker from yesterday. He does not think Cam Newton is going to start for the Patriots. You listen. A little over 10 minutes from now, your double play. And at noon today, in a little over a half hour, your Beltway Blitz on the teams in town you care the most about. At 1 o'clock, Albert Breer goes around the NFL with us. And at 1:30, former Nat Sean Kelly on how the clubhouse will react to players like Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross saying they will not participate in the 2020 season. Yesterday, we had Ross Tucker on the show. He said something we hadn't considered, which is, what if the Patriots don't start Cam Newton? Listen to this.
They got a lot of question marks at quarterback. We've already been over that. Like, I don't think, and I've gotten criticized on Twitter and on my podcast for saying this at Ross Tucker NFL, but I don't think it's a lock that Cam Newton even starts. I mean, Belichick never looks at things, guys, through a one-year prism. He's looking 2, 3, 4 years down the line as well. It's better for him if Stidham starts. Like, if Stidham's ready to go and as good as Cam, they're going to go with Stidham. He's cheaper, he's younger, he's healthier, and they can build around him for the long haul. I mean, there's a reason why he played Tom Brady even when Drew Bledsoe was the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL. So I think people just lose sight of those things. I'm not sold that Cam's going to all of a sudden be able to get back to MVP form.
he hit something on the head that makes me think about this and give it credence, which is you can't predict Bill Belichick. You don't know what he's going to do. He is not like everybody else. And if they're zigging, he's going to zag. And if they think one thing, he probably thinks the other. Danny, I saw this from Diana Rossini today. In fact, this was right after we went on the air within the last hour. She said, I spoke over text with an AFC East head coach, and which is always odd when you're now limiting your source that's not named down to like four people. But what? And it's not Bill Belichick. Yeah, so now say, it's down to three people.
It's either Sean McDermott, Adam Gase, or, yeah, it's
or Flores. So, yeah, she says, the AFC East coach talking Cam Newton. She says, I think they're going to keep three quarterbacks. Use Cam Newton perhaps as the wild card. I actually don't see him starting week one in the offense. Wow. I know one thing for a fact. The Patriots love Jarrett Stidham. This is a coach, one of the three guys you just named in that division on the Patriots. Are you buying this at all? I mean, it sounds insane that they would sign Cam, but he was a free agent forever. They're not paying him anything. And you've got to remember, it's Belichick, man. It's Belichick.
Yeah, so the money's going to end up being very similar, at least for this year, right? Isn't Cam Newton basically veteran minimum around $1 million? That's almost to the dollar what Stidham's going to cost, 800 some odd thousand right there. But going forward, yeah, you would think if Cam Newton plays and plays well, it's going to cost you more than the league minimum to retain him. But there is something to what Ross Tucker is saying here, in so much as the better thing for the Patriots and the better thing for any organization for that matter is to have the cheap late round quarterback start for you. You can do what Dallas did for years before now they're going to have to start paying Dak Prescott $1 billion. Or even the first rounder with the Rams. How good a team they were able to surround Jared Goff with before they gave him that terrible contract because he stinks. Everybody knows the value of the young quarterback. If he can play well, you can put a great team around him until you have to start paying him 30, 35, 40 million bucks per year. So, yeah, the best thing for them to have happen is that Stidham is the guy, figures it out at some point in the not-too-distant future, starts for a few years, and they can surround him with some pretty legit talent. We're sort of familiar with that formula. So there is something to that, and that Belichick doesn't care what the perception is. You know that about him. And they see a softening of the market, a guy that shouldn't be getting the veterans minimum, a guy that could start, if healthy, for a lot of teams in this league that's a unique playmaker. So they may just say, we'll use you in packages, or you'll be our goal line read option kind of thing, or the occasional third down, whatever. They may use him that way and not care what people think, or they may start him. To me, it seems like you sign Cam Newton, you're starting Cam Newton. I think he's still in that camp because of how much of a celebrity and how magnetizing his personality is and how big a deal he is in terms of the league and what he's done in the not-too-distant past. But I could see it. I understand the argument.
When the story broke that he went to New England, and I said this to you yesterday and the day before, I was really surprised with the extreme takes of Patriots are back in the championship mix. Cam Newton to New England is going to replace Tom Brady. All these different big headlines that you saw. I thought it was just extreme. This is now a correction that's utmost in the other direction. Like, to me, this is maximum the other way. This is, you swing the pendulum as far as it'll go in the opposite direction now, and this is probably excessive too. Just like the idea that Cam, who watched Kyle Allen play last year, partially because he wasn't healthy, but partially because they thought Kyle Allen at one point was better, and who hadn't been really good in a few years, he's not going to fix everything for New England. He's not going to come in and just be an MVP caliber player again. Look at his last couple seasons. He hasn't proven he can stay healthy. But the opposite of that is he's not a starter on a team with Jarrett Stidham. The truth to me is obviously in the middle, where I think he will start, and I don't think he'll be a game changer anymore per se. I want to see, as a dual threat, can he move around? Can he get outside the pocket? Can he make plays? Can he run through tackles? Can he take on contact? Because of his size and running style, I mean, he has been probably more abused and hit viciously and maliciously in a way that most quarterbacks will 100%. Never have to worry about, and he never gets flags thrown that help him. I mean, he just has to basically wear it, which is tough. But I had not thought at all about the possibility that he may not start, and I now give it a small chance. I would say the chances that Stidham's the guy in week one for me are 20%, But right after he signed, I would have told you it's like 1% or 2%. But it actually makes sense. And if it wasn't the Patriots, I would just completely dismiss this outright, Danny. But I keep coming back to it's Belichick, dude. If you think you know, you don't. Whatever you think he should do or will do, he'll do something different.
Well, go beyond that. How many times have we somehow been surprised by the quarterback story? Not just in New England, but and Ross mentioned that, of course, with Brady taking over for Drew Bledsoe. But remember when Matt Flynn was the plan in Seattle and then this third rounder overtook him? Remember when everyone's like, Dallas is going to stink, and then Dak Prescott came in and basically forced Tony Romo into retirement? Or, you know, you could fill in the blank a million times over where some guy that at one point was a joke or an afterthought, the Redskins are going to be 32 out of 32. Kirk Cousins is going to be a disaster. Actually, he played okay. Not unbelievable, but he was pretty good. He wasn't an embarrassment, it turns out, right? We've seen this play out a billion times over. We don't know about Jared Stidham. We don't. We think we've got a scouting report based on what he was at Auburn a couple years ago, which is pedestrian at best and not special, and that's sort of the end of it. Maybe there's something to it, but then again, maybe he's also in the latest line of Jags that coaches wanted to prove how smart they were by trying to deploy, as I said, some Jag just to make everyone know that I'm the genius. We'll figure this thing out. To me, the perception I have of Jared Stidham is that he's not special. He's a career backup based on what sample? But I don't know. That's just kind of how I had him categorized.
But in fairness, that's because he was drafted where he was drafted.
Yeah, exactly. So I see Newton sign.
We don't know anything
that's
about Jared Stidham. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of why we go through this exercise is we think we know. We don't.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny like Vegas did. He said, is it also not better for the Patriots to play Cam for a year or two to keep the price down on Stidham, and then you can pay him like a backup? I mean, at some point, though, he's going to start. And if he shows anything when he starts, then it's going to be hard to pay him like a backup, as we've seen for the quarterback market. Double play next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. It's time for our double play, though, non-sports, something going on in our lives. Danny, I saw this story, and I thought this would be fun to mention. So everyone's kind of acting a fool and doing different things to try to keep themselves from COVID-19, understandably. But this was via WUSA TV9 in town, and I actually originally saw it via a blog on Barstool Sports. But basically what's happening is that people are renting library books. They're taking the library books home, and then they're putting them in the microwave to try to kill off any bad germs from C-19 and from the coronavirus. The problem is that all these libraries around the country, to keep their books and label them and so that they know it's their book and not someone else's, they put something in these books, these little chips that have some metal in it, and the books can catch on fire and burn, and it ruins the books. So Kent District Library issued a tweet with a bunch of pictures of, like, burned books. Reminder that KDL will quarantine returned materials for 72 hours. The pictures below show what will happen when you try to microwave a book. The radio frequency tags and all KDL materials have metal in them. It will catch on fire in your microwave. And then another library here, Greenwood County Library System, wherever that is. Please don't microwave your library books to kill the coronavirus. Either leave them alone for 3 days, or if they're hardback covers, you can spray the plastic with a paper towel and Clorox and wipe them down. The books have metal security strips. Putting books in the microwave will heat the strips and burn the pages. But I guess this is a thing. First of all, I haven't been to a library in a long, long time, which doesn't make me cool. It's just an old school bit, right? I mean, when's the last time you went to a library and got a book?
It's a great question. The 90s?
Have you, like, in the 1990s? Done it with your kid? Like, my wife definitely will be the person that takes our kid to do it. I don't think I'll do that.
He comes home from school with a school library book, right?
Okay.
Like, every week there's a new book. And for, like, for, you know, reading in his spare time, we're reading to him, he's reading to us, learning how to read, yada, yada, yada. But we're not going, hey, let's go to the public library as a thing. We haven't done that in a minute.
We have a giant bookshelf in her room, and it's hundreds of books probably, and she basically wants the same six read to her. Like, Are You My Mother and Green Eggs and Ham. And, you know, she has, like, one little sound or word that lets you know what book she wants. But that's where we're at, and there's like hundreds that'll never get touched. So I don't know that we're anywhere near going to a library to get her more books. But a couple things I thought about here. One, that just seems like a really dumb thing to do, to put a book in the microwave to kill germs. That's number one. Number two, they're saying when they get the book back that they essentially quarantine it for 72 hours. Does that mean it's all good at that point? Like if I get a
yes.
book 4 days after someone had the coronavirus, those germs can't exist longer than 4 days? Is that what we're saying?
That is the understanding. So the initial, remember the initial panic, nobody mentioned anything about masks months ago. This was all about wash your hands, spray down everything that comes to you. My wife is still doing that, by the way, even though the CDC is now like you don't have to do that anymore. She still does it. So like somebody brings, let's say last time, for example, we ordered our curry, right? We got pizza and we got some meatballs and wings and stuff, right? So when it comes, she's spraying down the outside of the pizza box. She's spraying down the outside of the plastic bag, spraying down the outside of the meatball container, spraying down the outside of the wings, and then putting them in the oven for an extra, you know, 10, 12 minutes to kill whatever's on there and keep it that way. That was the initial panic, was that it can live on surfaces forever. Well, now we know that it's not true. So you basically, the three-day timeline is overkill, for lack of a better term, but it's allowed to, if it does that, you're pretty much not getting it. Like if you touched the, I'm looking at the Zoom. If you had corona on your right index finger and you touched that the chair that you're sitting in, and I walk by in 3 days and touch that same spot, I am not getting the Rona.
Even indoors.
Even indoors.
All right, that's good.
As
good
I understand it.
That could change in like two more
days. But that could certainly change.
By the way, now I'm intrigued. So you like our curry. That's your go-to spot, it seems like. Are their wings just Saul and Maul? Like, do you just love their meatballs? What do you get there?
So try, and I've been, after just around Father's Day, or I embarrassed myself, Grant. I had the discipline of a sheep, and I ate whatever I felt like, and I was like, it's Father's Day, that's why I'm doing it. And it was disgusting. I embarrassed myself, and I was so gross. And I looked at the wife, and I was like, we go to the beach in, I can't remember what it was like 3 weeks or whatever, almost to the day. I was like, please hold me accountable to this. I can't do it myself. I'm not a man by any definition. I want to be really strict for the next 3 weeks. And then, you know, you have a terrible day and it's like, screw it, let's get pizza. But for whatever, I basically have to, if I'm going to stay on plan, their wings are not breaded. I mean, the sauce probably isn't the best thing in the world for you, but they're really, really good. And I get the meatballs
and
I get Brussels sprouts.
Yeah,
so they'll fry them. Yeah, but they're not the full breaded explosion. So it's not great for you, but they're good. Oh, and the sauce is really good. They got a number of sauces there. I love supporting the team. Those guys are awesome.
That there is your boy's double play. I've left you very little time, but let's see what you can do with your minute.
I will certainly go very fast, GP. Rest in peace, Carl Reiner, 98 years old. 98 years old. What a comedy life. Writer, performer, director, producer, everything. So many classic funny things he was responsible for. You would probably remember him as the guy who played Mr. Lyman Zerka in the Ocean's 11 movies, and he's the guy that does the great acting and voice type stuff. He passed away at 98 years old, responsible for an unbelievable amount of funny stuff over the course of his lifetime. He and Mel Brooks were great buddies, just an absolute star, Hollywood royalty. A great, great, great career. So rest in peace, Carl.
That's a shame. Lived a great life, though. He's Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to Fan Blitzen next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's better over here.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.